bringing you weekly NBA draft analysis, scouting intel, and opinion. You are listening to the Prospect Podcast with Ethan Piotta. Welcome into the first edition of the Prospect Podcast. I am Ethan Piotta. Hyped to be here today, talk about the 2020 draft class with you guys. Hoping to do this almost every single week, kind of still trying to decide whether I want to do it as a form of a podcast where I'm just talking like I am right now, or where I want to kind of do a YouTube series where I'm able to put clips on the screen, talk about them that way, that kind of podcast. But for right now, obviously just want to get right into content and kind of my, first thoughts that I'll put out there for you on this podcast. And let's start with the overall outlook on this draft class. It is a class that has been labeled extremely weak by a lot of people. It's a class that really doesn't have, it doesn't have a Zion. It doesn't have a Ja Morant. It doesn't even have, it could potentially not even have an RJ Barrett in it when you talk about, this draft class as a whole. However, I one thing that is different about this class, in my opinion, is I think it's filled with a lot of impact players. I think it's filled with a lot of guys that will come in from day one and potentially affect an NBA roster from the beginning. Obviously, you do have your guys on the higher upside side of things, like a Poku, like a LaMelo Ball. You could even say Killian Hayes for that regard. But there's a lot of guys when you look up and down this draft class that you kind of think, okay, they could potentially come in from day one and at the very least be a rotational piece on a lot of NBA teams, which is honestly a really valuable thing. This is a draft that's going to, I think, cater towards a lot of contenders. And what I mean by contenders is teams that value rookie contracts so much because, so much of their salary cap is being spent on their star guys. And having those rookie contracts on the team is so valuable. Having those rotational players that you can kind of just plug in and play from day one are extremely valuable. It saves you a lot of money in the long run. And also just, helps you develop something that you could potentially find for the future as an NBA team. And that's what's kind of different for me about this class, at least, is I think there's when you go up and down the board, getting a guy like Desmond Bane, getting a guy like Grant Riller, getting a guy like Killian Tilly, Tyshawn Alexander, Paul Reed, go up and down the board, there's a lot of guys, in that kind of 20 to 40 range that are going to be instant contributors in the NBA. And we'll talk about, some of more of those guys as the show rolls on, some of my personal favorites, some guys to watch for. But I want to start from, at least the media's top of the draft, not my top of the draft whatsoever. This is a guy that's ranked number 19 on my personal big board, James Wiseman. Here's the thing with Wiseman. He was obviously dominant in high school, coming out, five-star recruit, top of his class. Played three games at Memphis. We all know what happened with the NCAA, where he's been ruled ineligible after those three games. We're not going to get into all that right now, but, that did happen. And it's interesting to me, Wiseman, you could say his first two games that he played against, I think one of them was South Carolina Upstate and the other one was another no-name school. He dominated and he rightfully, should. You look at him, he's 7'1", 240. He's got great inside skills. He's dominant around the rim. And that's his game. That's what he does. The third game of the season was where I was waiting to watch how would James Wiseman perform against an actual quality NCAA team, and that was the Oregon game. I think Memphis was ranked 14 at the time. I think Oregon was ranked 12 at the time. It might have been flipped, and I think that game was where I saw the first kind of major red flags from James Wiseman, and whether that was, him being extremely choppy and slow on his feet in rotations, not always being in the right spot on team defense, whether that was him getting switched onto the perimeter and blown by some of Oregon's guards, albeit, Peyton Pritchard is an above average guard, but, other guys like Will Richardson and whatnot, And aside from that, you know, the fact that inside, you know, against some of Oregon's big guys, he was leaving the ground way too often to block shots, was in foul trouble early in that game, barely even played in the first half because he was in so much foul trouble. And, you know, that's just the defensive side of the ball. And those are major red flags to me because, again, he is, you know, I'll reiterate this, 7'1", 240. He's 18, 19 years old. He probably does not know what to do with that frame yet, which is totally understandable. Again, I'm not saying I don't think he develops. I think he develops to be a solid NBA player. But his skill set is what worries me. His skill set, to me, is extremely replaceable. Offensively, he clogs the paint a lot. And that's kind of a product of him right now, at least, not having an outside shot. That's not saying he will not develop an outside shot, but right now he's shown no willingness to shoot the three. He does extend to the mid-range a little bit, doesn't look great from the mid-range. Most of the work he does is around the paint, around the rim, which is understandable. Again, 7'1", 240. Let's reiterate that. He is a specimen. He's great around the rim. He has great finishing. You know, he's, you know, violent around the rim. He attacks the basket hard. Those are all qualities that I like about him a lot. He's, you know, there's a reason he averaged 34 points per game per 40 numbers in his first few games at Memphis. But again, him kind of taking up so much space in the paint, not stretching the floor, and then obviously already combined with the defensive concerns that we have, I think his skill set of just being a pure inside finisher with, you know, post moves that I don't think are going to necessarily work right away at the NBA level puts me a lot lower on him. Don't get me wrong, he has upside. I want James Wiseman to develop an outside shot. He looks like a great guy. And all, you know, everything that you've heard about him is positive. I just do not agree with him being ranked as a top three overall prospect. And I, you know, obviously it's nothing against him. I just think that, you know, again, look at the current NBA. Andre Drummond, Clint Capella, two of the better rebounders, better shot blockers, better finishers in our game that are getting dumped at the trade deadline for basically nothing. That is kind of like, you know, the skill set that Wiseman is at least showing in his early stages is being just that pure back-to-basket, protect the rim a little bit, grab a few rebounds, kind of five. Obviously, Drummond and Capella getting shipped off could be a product of their contract. They were making a lot of money, making a little bit too much money at their respective places. But again, two of the better centers in the NBA when they were traded, and both traded to bottom of the barrel, you know, Eastern Conference teams in the Atlanta Hawks and Cleveland Cavaliers, respectively. So a guy like Wiseman, when I say his skill set is replaceable, that's what you know I mean, and I do think he has some potential. But you know, if the Golden State Warriors were to get the first overall pick, I just do not see the fit there. Especially, you know, how you have guys like Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Wiggins if he stays, that are, you know, space the floor kind of guys, attack the basket, kick it out kind of guys. And you're going to, what, clog the paint with a big 7-1 guy that is going to get screened to death, I think, his first few years in the NBA? Like, that's just not a win-now move for me. I still think he has a lot to develop. I still think he's very far off from where he could be, which is why I don't buy him as, you know, a top-3 guy. I don't even buy him as a top-10 guy, in my opinion. And that's kind of a product of, you know, what my idea of the modern-day NBA big man is. And I'm going to get to the guy right now that I think is the perfect representation of that. And that guy to me is Onyeka Okongwu. Reminds me a lot of Bam Adebayo in the way that he plays, in his potential, and just his overall skill set, right? So, I mean, you look at Big O, let's, again, start with defense. 6'9", 7-foot-plus wingspan. He's a little bit undersized at center, but he makes up for it with that wingspan, with great athleticism. He's good on his feet. I like what I saw when he got switched on to guys. I mean, one of the biggest things that stood out to me this year is you look at, you know, Okongwu getting switched on to guys like Tyrell Terry on the perimeter from Stanford and sticking with him, right? And that was like, wow, like he is versatile on the defensive side of the ball, which is exactly what every NBA team is looking for right now. And again, a little bit undersized. I don't buy him as a center in the NBA, even though that's what he played in college. I kind of buy him as turning into a four for the rest of his career. And I think with that comes the development of his outside shot, which is the really only weakness I have to his game. And it's interesting because at Chino Hills, which I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with, the high school where all the brothers went to, where LaMelo, he played with LaMelo for 4 years, Lonzo and whatnot, Okongwu demonstrated an ability to shoot the outside shot at Chino Hills, which is why I found it a little bit strange that his first year in college basketball at USC playing for Andy Enfield, he really didn't show any desire to even shoot the three ball. And he shot a lot of mid-range shots. He was, you know, I think he shot 75% from the free throw line. He has good indicators of, you know, being, I think, turning into a competent 35%, 37% shooter at the next level, one that teams at least have to respect. And that's what I buy with Okongwu that really boosts his stock up, because he's got all the other tools. He's versatile on defense. Like I said, he averaged almost 3 blocks per game his rookie year, or his freshman year at USC. And again, you know, you look at him 6'9", maybe he's not able to, you know, defend a guy like Joel Embiid right away. But he was, I think, just exceptional on the defensive side of the ball. Always seems to be in the right place. His rotations were great. That's where he got a lot of his blocks, a lot of his block shots, which almost contributed to 3 a game. Was him just, you know, kind of sliding over, being in the right spot, blocking guys on the back, you know, on the backside of the post and whatnot. And that's what stood out to him. When you watch his tape, that's what stands out to you. He's able to hold his own on defense on the perimeter. And he's able to, you know, always seem to be in the right spot, blocks a lot of shots, rebounds the ball really well. And that's not even getting to the offensive side of the ball for him, where I think he'll fit really well as a 4. You know, you look at his synergy table, 97th percentile in total offense for Onyeka Okongwu. That's obviously amazing. Going down the list, 94th percent as a post-up guy, 90% as offense, as you know, as an offensive rebounder, 78th percent as the pick and roll man. I think in the pick and roll, that's even, you know, from what I've watched from him, that's probably one of his best, or at least most translatable skills that he'll take to the NBA with him. He has great vision out of the post. He works his way out of double teams. He's able to find the open guy out of double teams. And you know, the two-way potential for Okongwu is through the roof. And that's what, you know, I have him number 1 on my board. I have Wiseman number 19. That's where the difference is for me. That's where I find the difference between these two guys. I think Okongwu's game translates so much better to the current NBA. I think he comes in and he's a 15-year starter for an NBA franchise. I think he's an all-star multiple times. I think he gives you great value from day one. I think he gives you great value for five years from now, especially if he is to develop that outside shot, which is the last portion of his game. He's great around the rim. He's athletic. He's fun to watch. He gets off that pick and roll, and it's almost like he jumps off a springboard sometimes. You're like, there's no way this guy's 6'9". But again, it's the wingspan, it's the athleticism, it's, you know, the ball handling for his size that is so deceptive, and it almost takes you by surprise. You know, he has the Euro step move in his game, a move that we've seen from an Adebayo, a move that we've seen from a Joel Embiid, and obviously Okongwu is so different from Embiid. Embiid's 7'2", Okongwu's 6'9". He kind of does have a lot of Embiid in his game, in the way that he finishes around the rim, in the way that he protects the rim, rebounds hard, is versatile on defense, is fun to watch. And that's why I'm buying him as my number one guy. That's why I'm buying him as my number one big man. And, you know, you look at the draft board, and my dream for Okongwu is that he goes to a team like the Minnesota Timberwolves. We just mocked him to the Timberwolves in our overtime heroics draft, which I think, you know, and the guys have said this, is probably the best fit in the first round of any NBA team for any prospect. Getting Okongwu to play alongside a stretch five, just an overall dominant center like Karl Anthony Towns, is so crucial. And, you know, the Timberwolves have been looking for a power forward. They've gone through Taj Gibson, Bielitsa, the list goes on, for, I think, a number of years to play alongside Karl Anthony Towns. And Okongwu is a seamless fit. Like, I mean, you talk about the defensive versatility on that team, it absolutely just jumps through the roof. The rim protection gets a big uptick. And it doesn't rush him to become such a competent three-point shooter right away, because he can play a little bit more inside with Towns stretching the floor, with Towns doing all the things that he does on offense. And again, just, you know, closing thoughts on Okongwu, I think that, again, I'm going to reiterate this point. The versatility, the athleticism that I've seen, the offensive, defensive, two-way potential that I've seen from this kid is why I buy him his skill set so high and have him number one. And I'm really excited to see what he does in the NBA, because I do think he has the potential to be one of the better small ball fives, potentially stretch fours that we see, if he is able to develop that outside shot. And I'm going all in on the outside shot because of what I saw in high school, because of what I saw at the free throw line this year, because of what I saw from his mid-range game. I'm going all in. And, you know, it's why I hope this made it a little bit more clear as to why I have him so much higher than Wiseman. And obviously it's all up for debate. I think both should have, you know, two solid NBA careers, but I am going with Okongwu right now pretty safely, pretty solidly. Sticking on the path of kind of comparing players, comparing skill sets, this is a guard-heavy draft. This is one of the better, you know, I think guard classes that we've had. Which is one of the few strengths of this class is, again, guard play. You go up and down the board. I mean, you got guys like, starting at the top, LaMelo Ball, Killian Hayes, Anthony Edwards you can throw in there, Tyrese Halliburton, Kyra Lewis, Tyrese Maxey, going up and down, Cole Anthony, Nico Mannion, Tyrell Terry, please declare, Desmond Bain, Grant Riller, Trey Jones, you know, Dotson, Cassius Winston, whatever you want to say, Ashton Hagens, Theo Maledon. And that's not even to mention, you know, the amount of guys like Miles Powell, Peyton Pritchard, Marcus Howard that could help a team at the very end of the draft. And this draft for me, what I like about the guard play is that it starts at the top and it ends at the bottom. I think that everyone has a chance to impact a team from day one, even as an undrafted free agent, if you're talking about a guy like Marcus Howard or Peyton Pritchard. In the past few weeks, I've been on a number of shows, seemingly Knicks-related a lot of the time, where, you know, it makes sense because the New York Knicks are one of the teams, especially in the lottery, that most needs a point guard. And the two most likely candidates for that spot, in my opinion, are LaMelo Ball or Killian Hayes. The two best point guards in this draft, the number one, the number three overall, the number two, the number three overall prospects on my board, respectively. Here's the difference between the two. Let's start with LaMelo. He has, I think, the most superstar upside in this draft. He has the biggest potential to be an absolute star in the NBA. You're looking at a 6'7 guard with unreal vision, unreal ball handling ability, and has shown flashes of being potentially a solid shooter in the NBA. That's still kind of up for debate. 25% this season with the Illawarra Hawks. In the NBL, I think he, you know, when you look at the Illawarra Hawks, obviously they did not have a great season in the NBL whatsoever. I think they were the worst team possibly, but I attribute that more to the team than just to LaMelo Ball. I think LaMelo held his own really well against guys in what I think is probably the third, fourth, fifth best league in the entire world. I think, again, back to the superstar upside. Now, will he maximize that potential? Will he put the work in? I don't know. I don't think LaVar as a person is that much of a red flag. I think it's more of just LaMelo. You know, he already has the following. He already has the fame. He's going to come in kind of with a target on his head. How does he respond to that? In a space like New York, I think LaMelo will do just fine. I think he'll hold his own because I think he'll be able to tune out the outside noise. I think people will come to watch him play. I do think that he is the best fit. He's the most Knicks pick of all time. He's the best fit for the Knicks at number six. You need a guy with superstar potential. There you go. You got him. Take a shot. Take a shot in the dark. Whatever you need to do. LaMelo Ball is the guy for the Knicks for me. Will he have a better career than Killian Hayes? That is kind of just up in the air because I think Killian Hayes is more NBA ready in terms of, you know, 6'5", 6'4". Great frame, good body, I think almost 200 pounds, combo guard, point guard, whatever you want to call him, he gets the job done. He's a floor general with space creation ability on the offensive side of the ball. He attacks the rim well. He finds his open guys. He's got good vision, good ball handling. He's able to hold his own on the defensive side of the ball. That step back from Killian Hayes that he's developed this year, he's made such great strides in his game. He's not even going to be 19 by the time the draft happens. Knock on wood, because we don't know when the draft will happen. But yeah, he's his space creation ability, he's going to come in and affect a team right away. I think he plays a lot like D'Angelo Russell on the offensive side of the ball, especially when D'Lo came into the league. And that's what, you know, and defensively, I think he's got a whole other skill set, because I think he's a great defender. Just declared for the NBA draft today as well. However, Killian might end up being a better point guard than LaMelo Ball in the NBA throughout their careers. We'll have to see what happens. In New York, I don't think he's the right fit. He's still 18 years old, as I said. Coming into a stage like New York, already with the stereotype of Frank Ntilikina on his back, French point guard, international point guard, whatever you want to say. You know, coming from a league in Germany sounds oddly familiar. But this guy is skilled. He is extremely skilled. He's extremely NBA ready, in my opinion. I think if he goes to the right team, he could be really, really special in the right system. Because, again, I go to the biggest thing with Killian that I need him to do is assert himself. And it's hard. You know, when you're playing in a good league in Germany, you're an 18-year-old point guard, you're playing with a lot of veterans, playing with guys like Zoran Drogic on that team that have, you know, been in the NBA before. It's not necessarily just, like, easy for you to assert yourself right away. But if he is able to come in with the kind of chip on his shoulder that, okay, I am very skilled, I can contribute right away, let me develop a little bit. His work ethic is something that I really buy, because especially this year at Ulm, I mean, his offensive game has gone to the next level. That step back move is entirely new. His space creation is something that has opened my eyes. His shooting ability is something that's gotten a lot better over the last year. And I think he's just going to keep getting better. Who do I think is better right now? Probably Killian Hayes. Who do I think will be better in the long run? LaMelo Ball. I think he's going to maximize that upside. In my opinion, I'm going to take a shot in the dark, which is why I think a team with a star need takes a shot at LaMelo Ball. And there's, you know, obviously, I'm looking at these reports. NBA GMs are very questionable this year because of, you know, the whole coronavirus going around. You don't have the, you know, the tools to scout guys like LaMelo. I mean, you got to figure that one out. If you're going to pass on a generational talent like LaMelo Ball or even Killian Hayes, and they're going to slip, I mean, a team in the seventh or eighth spot in the draft is going to get lucky this year. Like, why? Like, that's, I mean, you got to put the work in if you're an NBA franchise. And I think both of these guys are going to have good NBA careers. I think LaMelo Ball, again, superstar upside, superstar potential, the most in this draft out of any single player. It's the highest ceiling out of any single player. And that goes with, you know, 6'7" point guard. If he's able to shoot the ball, if he's able to, I'm not even going to judge his defense this year because I just don't think he cared. And obviously, he'll have to care in the NBA. Otherwise, he's going to be right back in the NBL in a few years. Again, time will tell. If you're talking from a Knicks perspective, LaMelo over Killian for me. And just in an overall board perspective, I still have LaMelo higher. Still holding out hope for him. I think, again, if I'm drafting off superstar upside, there you go. Take it. Let's run. Here's another guy, I think, and, you know, we just talked about superstar upside. Who has the most? Probably LaMelo. Who has the second most? I'm thinking Alexej Pukasevski. Again, if you haven't heard of this guy, please check him out. There's games on YouTube from him. You can watch a highlight tape. He's a 6'10 shooting guard. He's a unicorn. I mean, unreal two-way potential. A guy, again, you might look at slip a lot because NBA scouts aren't overseas, aren't international, aren't able to watch Olympiakos B, Greek second league teams. From what I've watched from Pukasevski this year, he's such a fun prospect because he's this guy that has not grown into his body at all. He has a huge, I mean, he looks like he's going through puberty still. And it's unreal. He's, you know, it's an 18-year-old kid who's 6'10", probably under 200 pounds if we're being honest, but probably with the most two-way potential in the NBA. Now, I'm not saying he's going to come in from day one to the spot where he lands and be an instant contributor. But, I mean, he has the potential to, you know, eventually be an all-star in the NBA because he plays, he has all the perimeter skills, you know, from a guard that you would want and a guy who's 6'10". Like, he moves so well in the perimeter. The Kristaps Porzingis comparisons are so lazy to me because he moves so much better than Porzingis on the outside. He's so much more fluid. He gets out in transition. He can handle the ball. Unreal vision. I mean, you look at some of the passes he's making. It looks like he plays for the Harlem Globetrotters. Like, it's almost unreal. And he's you know, long. Definitely, his wingspan's probably definitely above 7'2", 7'3". He gets out in transition. He runs. He plays above the rim. He can knock down the outside shot. Obviously, you know, he's probably one of the most, you know, you could either go all-star or you could go back to the Greek second league guys in the NBA from right away. And, you know, that's obviously assuming that he gets drafted high, which I would take him high. I took him number 8 with the Charlotte Hornets pick in the recent mock draft I did, and I was comfortable with it.
Put him on the Greensboro Swarm. Let him get beat up. Let him get used to it. I don't know.
Let you play some rotational minutes. Let's see what you can develop to be. Especially in a draft like this, why not take a flyer on a guy like that, right? If it's so weak overall, I mean, you got to take a flyer on guys with major two-way upside, major two-way potential. I mentioned earlier how the NBA is run. Stretch 4, stretch 5, two-way guys dominant right now. He fits the criteria of every single one of those boxes. I think he could be a future stretch 5 with his rim protection ability. I think he could be a future, small forward in the NBA with the way he plays because he's versatile. He moves his feet on the defensive side. I still think he has a lot of work in terms of on-ball defense. In terms of off-ball defense, he's still very immature. He's 18 years old. Again, like I said, his body is under 200 pounds, definitely, even though he might be listed as 210. But again, the upside is unreal for a guy like him. And it's something that makes you very excited when you watch his tape, when you watch his games. Moving on from Poku, moving on from just some of the overall guys I wanted to specifically cover, wanted to mention some guys that I'm lower on than most in this draft. I think that's important. I think that's something that, you know, people want to hear. Differing opinions is often good. I've already mentioned James Wiseman. I'm lower on him than most. I think a lot of draft Twitter overall, though, isn't very high on Wiseman. I'm not high on Nico Mannion. I have grown on him a little bit, but here's my thing. If you're an undersized guard in the NBA, Nico Mannion is 6'3", 190. If you're an undersized guard in the NBA, you have to be exceptionally good, I believe, at 3 of 4 things. You have to be an exceptionally good shooter. You have to be an exceptionally good defender. You have to be an exceptionally good passer, and you have to be exceptionally fast. You have to be quick. You have to be able to expose mismatches. You have to be able to get your shot off through the trees, through all these, you know, multiple 7-footers with, you know, ginormous wingspans and all these guys, right? In my opinion, Nico Mannion only has the ball handling and the vision. And that's kind of just 1 of 4 of those boxes. Will he be a rotational NBA point guard that can give you kind of a pass-first mode mentality, can give you, you know, can run your offense, can run your second unit? Maybe. Maybe. I think he'd be best served to do one more year at Arizona. Because for me, he just does not have that second burst. He just does not have that speed that's going to translate well to the NBA. I think he's going to be in for a rude awakening in just, you know, on-ball defense. I think he's going to get pushed around a lot. Only shooting 32% from three this year was not something that I liked at all from him.
And it kind of makes you think, okay, let's hold the horses on Mannion here. If you're Nico, I'd love for him to stay another year at Arizona. I think it would be really, really good for his development. Otherwise, you know, you're talking about major bust potential for a guy if he doesn't perform well in his first year. And that's kind of what I worry about with him, at least. So, one more year at Arizona would do him well. Right now, I hope he doesn't declare. I believe the story of him declaring was proven wrong by his father, Pace Mannion, who was also an NBA player. So, that's my verdict on Mannion. I'm not high on him right now. Again, similar to the next guy I'm going to talk about, Cole Anthony. I don't think Cole needs another year at UNC, but again, a guy I have in my 20s range. And the reason I have him in my 20s is because there's a lot of other guards to me, Kyra Lewis, Tyrese Halliburton, we talked about Ball and Hayes, that have better skill sets than than Cole Anthony. And I'm going to give Cole Anthony a little bit of leeway. I like him better than Mannion. And that's the main reason for that is because I don't know how bad, you know, his shooting percentages this year at North Carolina were abysmal. He almost averaged 4 turnovers per game, I think, per 36. And defensively, I didn't like what I saw at all from him. So, but then again, I don't know how much of that is, you know, him playing on a horrible North Carolina team with a grad transfer senior in Garrison Brooks as your best player. Or is it more of just him overall, you know, trying to rush things, trying to force things because he's playing on such a bad team, trying to carry that team? Or is it the fact that he actually does not have good shot selection? He's a small guy, right? He's 6'3". Obviously caught a lot of eyes in high school. You saw so much with Cole of him just like in high school, you know, the dominant mixtapes, him getting above the rim. You didn't see any of that this year at North Carolina. I think the game hit him hard. The translation to a bigger game, especially in the ACC, was a tough adjustment for him. And I worry about his efficiency on an NBA team, which is kind of why I'm on the lower side for him. And then wrapping it up here, the last guy I'm going to point out that I'm kind of lower on than most, and I think this is kind of, it's starting to be a little bit more universal in terms of consensus on this guy, but Sadiq Bey from Villanova, I've really fallen on him. I know everyone kind of looks at him, oh, how could he fail? He's going to be, you know, the prototypical 3-and-D guy in the NBA. I don't know. His movement is questionable. He kind of sometimes when you watch him move, he moves like he's hurt, and that's kind of what worries me about Sadiq Bey. But I obviously am going to take in consideration he is a good defender. He can't shoot the 3-ball. Those are two skill sets that immediately translate to the NBA game. I do worry about his movement against NBA players. Can he stay in front of people at the next level? Can he be an impactful enough team defender? Can he shoot the 3-ball at a high enough rate to stay on the court somewhere? And that's why I've kind of fallen on into my 30s, 40s range. On a better note, though, I'm now going to highlight my favorite players from the class, favorite players that I've guys that have just grown on me, guys that I'm higher on than maybe most. I'm going to start it off with, I would say this is my favorite, if not my second favorite, maybe behind Poku in the draft. This guy right here, Tyrell Terry from Stanford. I've been posting nonstop clips of him on Twitter. I've been kind of almost diving into his entire season again after watching him a lot live. Watching his tape, obviously, is really fun just because he's such a fun player. I mean, this guy, here's the thing about Terry. Let me put this out. I don't know. The consensus is that he will return to school. Obviously, he's a freshman, very undersized. That's his biggest knock, is the fact that he's going to be a project in the NBA because he's a smaller kind of guy. He looks like Steph Curry in college in terms of his build. I wish he would declare this year because I really do think he has top 15 potential. When you look at this guy's tape, I mean, he is a shot maker. And the thing about him is, you know, you would expect a guy like Terry, who's a smaller build, to maybe lose a little bit of confidence. He is the most confident player I have seen, watching film on in the last few years. His demeanor never changes. It could be something he just did well, something he just did bad. He never bats an eye. That's the number one thing for me, is his demeanor. He's going to come in with a load of confidence to the NBA just because of that part of his, you know, personality. And that's arguably the most intriguing thing, aside from him being able to shoot from 40 feet, aside from him being a knockdown three-point shooter, aside from him being a really good team defender, distributor, quick off the bounce, good first step, all those qualities. It's fun to watch that guy play, especially if he's to go to a contender. I mean, I can't imagine Tyrell Terry on a team like the Bucks spacing the floor with Giannis, being a team defender in Mike Budenholzer's system. He's extremely fun to watch, and, you know, if he's able to gain some mass, he's a solid height right now, 6'3", that's probably what he'll be. But if he's able to gain some mass, you know, put some pounds on, fill out his frame a little bit, wow. I mean, this could be one of the best players from the draft class, in my opinion. It was so fun to watch him play this year at Stanford. And in similarity to Terry, although this guy's a little bit more NBA ready, and it could be because he's a senior,
But I think one of the most, you know, aside from Terry, one of the most fun players I've seen on film this year, also a point guard, Grant Riller, from College of Charleston. And here's another guy, late first round prospect, top 20 on my board. I'm extremely high on him because I just think he's a shot maker, and you saw him a lot. I saw him a lot this year at College of Charleston playing off the ball, which was interesting to me. He's obviously listed as a point guard. He's 6'2", a little bit undersized, but he's like deceptively lanky, and not lanky in a way like skinny, because he has a strong lower body and obviously a really explosive first step. Sometimes makes bad decisions around the rim. That's the number one thing I've seen with him. Neutral on his defense, but man, when he gets hot, he's hot. He has unreal elevation on his jumpers. He's a great outside shooter. He's super fun to watch. Grant really one of my favorite players, and I'm going to go with another point guard at number three here. That's Kyra Lewis Jr., probably the fastest player in this class. The key to his game is speed. He's going to blow by you. He's going to finish around the rim. He can step back, knock down the three. Again, 19 years old is Kyra Lewis, second year in Alabama. He was so young that he didn't even want to, I don't even think he could declare his first year to the draft, and obviously returning, having a monster second season at Alabama. I really like Kyra Lewis Jr. Again, those are three point guards. Their value for me is top 20, all of them. Kyra Lewis, personally, is my eighth-ranked prospect, but they're probably going to be available 15 to 30, all of them, at very most. Again, I don't know if Tyrell Terry declares for the draft. I think it's pretty likely he returns to Stanford. But when you talk about point guards in this draft that I absolutely love, I am sold on those three guys. All three of them, super fun to watch, super good players. And just, you know, it's exciting when you turn on tape of these guys, because they make plays happen. They're shot creators, all three of them. I think they're fairly good distributors, all three of them. They play bigger than their size. Great burst, great explosiveness. I think any team lucks out by landing any of these three guys at point guard. And moving on from point guard, though, I'm going to, you know, list two more guys that I really like from this class. The first one, Aaron Nesmith, my personal favorite. Again, a guy who I have 14 on my board. And I mean, 14 games this season at Vanderbilt, cut short due to injury. But I mean, my goodness. You look at his synergy profile, 99th percentile in offense, 1.24 points per possession. That is unreal. In the overall half-court setting, 99th percentile. Spot up, 95th percentile. Off-screen, 97th percentile. Transition, 90th percentile. 96th off handoff and 97th in isolation. Unreal numbers, an unreal offensive player when you look at Aaron Nesmith. And just to put the numbers into a broader perspective, 52% from three. I think it was 52.5% from three this year. And I mean, that's not just on two attempts per game. That is on 8.2 attempts per game. 52.5% on 8.2 attempts per game. That's unreal. That's literally an unreal mark. He reminds me a lot of Buddy Hield in college. Buddy was a little bit better of a three-level scorer. But Nesmith, at least for me, in just terms of his shooting, I mean, he's been Steph Curry, Buddy Hield, every great college shooter like this year at Vanderbilt, or at least was before he was injured. One of my favorite players to watch again. The defense is a little bit suspect. I do see him morphing into a passable NBA defender. I love the value with any team that gets this guy, because I think he has great 3 and D potential. Again, more on the 3 side. More on the offensive side, because he's just a knockdown shooter. And we're not talking about open shots. He can, you know, catch and shoot. He can take it off one dribble. He can step back. He can get his own shot. Fun to watch. I wish his season didn't get cut short, because you're talking about a guy who could have jumped into the top 10 looks for me at Vanderbilt. But again, a great value pick for any team that picks him in the first round. I think past pick 14. Lastly, Jalen Smith, big man from Maryland. A lot of people don't like Jalen Smith or have fallen on him. He had draft potential last year, but decided to return to Maryland for his sophomore season. Still 19, 20 years old, still on the obviously younger side. This is a guy this year at Maryland that, you know, made absolute strides in his perimeter game, which is why he caught my eye. He moves a little bit funky. I will give you that. Let's get the bat out of the way right away. He does kind of move like a big man, and it kind of worries me occasionally. especially for his size. He's a lanky, not lanky, but kind of lean, a lean build. But I mean, this year at Maryland, 15 points per game, 10 rebounds per game. And the biggest number for me, 36% from three, 37% if you round up on three attempts per game. Really, really encouraging. And he kind of fits the mold as I think a modern NBA stretch five. He had a little bit of mass to him. He doesn't move as well as last year, which is kind of interesting. But he does, he blocks a lot of shots. Good rim protector, can rebound the ball, can score inside. Has shown ability to space the floor. You worry about him on switches. You worry about him out on the perimeter, especially in the NBA. Does that make him unplayable? I don't know. But when you have the two-way potential that Jalen Smith does, you know, I really don't understand why a lot of people have him, you know, 40s, 30s in their mock drafts. He's personally, I think, 17 for me on my board. And he's obviously just really, really fun to watch. And he, the biggest thing about him, I think that's underrated, he moves funky, but he can jump out the gym. I mean, I remember last year, I think Maryland played Belmont in the first round of the NCAA tournament, and he absolutely slammed all over Dylan Windler, Belmont legend, in that game. And again, just fun to watch, two-way potential. I love guys who have strong two-way potentials. Jalen Smith is one of those guys. That rounds out my favorite players. I'm going to go through the round two guys that I'm going to highlight this week. I'll do this every single week. I'll kind of highlight two, three, four round two guys that I think have big-time upside and good value for their potential draft positions. And then I'll get to the questions on my Twitter. First guy, when you look at big-time upside, hasn't been listed on any mock draft I've seen. Wasn't even included in my mock draft that I recently just did. But Nathan Knight from William & Mary, you talk about a four-year guy who stuck to the path. He's a great kid. You know, he stayed at William & Mary, trusted the process, had a breakout senior season, was amazing for them all 4 years, to be fair. A three-level scorer at 6'10", he plays bully ball inside, he can shoot from outside, he can drive by you, he has great ball handling, he'll rebound the ball and literally take it coast to coast. Unreal vision, still kind of a work-in-progress defender, but around the rim, he's great. Off the ball, a little bit questionable. On the ball, a little bit questionable. But around the rim, he's great. I mean, one of the best offensive players in the entire nation this year. I think was up there for the league leaders in double-doubles as well. Nathan Knight, I think, you know, as a round two slash undrafted free agent guy, could be a potential steal for a team in the long term. And the second guy I want to highlight here is Malik Fitz. From St. Mary's, I believe he averaged 16-7 this year in terms of points and rebounds. 6'6" guy that can play positions 2-4. You know, he can jump out the gym, can also knock down the three, can create his own shot. Good as a pick and roll ball handler. I think great two way potential on defense. He's a real threat as a round two guy for me. Again, round two undrafted free agent kind of dude. And I think you get good value with him, especially if he's able to perform well in, like, for example, a summer league setting. To know where you look and he's, you know, like, how did he fall this far? He just declared for the draft today, going to test the waters. I believe he said he's not going back to school no matter what at St. Mary's. But again, all West Coast Conference first team this year that just got announced this morning, just declared for the draft, and definitely a name to watch as the draft process moves along. Two big guys I'm going to round it out with. Zeke Nnaji from Arizona. I feel like he does not get enough looks. He's honestly a round one guy for me, round two maybe. But a big man, the biggest thing about him is he can protect the rim, he rebounds, he plays with a super high motor, he can finish, he's great hands. But he showed that he can knock down the mid-range this year, a little bit of the three as well. And that's something that's going to be huge for his game. You're looking at you know, the prototypical stretch five in the NBA, if he's able to continue expanding his range, because he can get it done inside, he can get it done in the post, he can score. Obviously playing with a really good, you know, passing point guard in Nico Mannion this year at Arizona. I loved what I saw from Nnaji. And the last guy, Killian Tilly, Gonzaga. Obviously we know about Tilly. I mean, this is a guy that is a first round talent, if not for his injury history. So skilled as a passer, can take it off the bounce, can knock down threes, has real ball handling, legit perimeter skills as a big man, can protect the rim. And you know, the biggest thing is just the injuries for him. And, you know, this is probably the number one guy that if in the second round you're able to land Killian Tilly and he pans out, you're looking like a genius as an NBA GM. And that's, you know, that's value right there, especially in the second round where, you know, so many picks are just drafted off sheer potential. Killian Tilly, I mean, if you're able to land him and he's able to work out, wow. And gonna round the show out here by, you know, I posted if you have any questions, I can answer them on the show on my Twitter. If you have any future questions and you're listening to this right now, please respond to that. I love, you know, just discourse and whatnot. First question here from Chris LeBron. Chris had me on a few weeks ago, I think, on his podcast, Off the Ball Podcast. It's a great time, great show. Check him out. He has a lot of good guests on. Great host, great guy. Chris asked who could be available with the Knicks' other first-round pick. I believe the Knicks have number 25. There's a lot of guys around that area that I really like, and it all just kind of depends on who the Knicks go with their first pick. For example, I mean, if you know they do pick a point guard, you're probably looking at a small forward for the Knicks, or maybe even a power forward. Which in that case, you know, I really like a guy for them like Jaden McDaniels, Jamias Ramsey. Keontae Johnson from Florida is really nice, 3-and-D potential. Jaden McDaniels kind of makes the most sense in New York, though, because he just has so much potential. I didn't even get to him today. You're talking about a 6'10 guy that is built like Kevin Durant, but plays absolutely nothing like him and is so immature. But, man, if he can figure it out and if he can, you know, he's a great defender, and if he's able to just, you know, use his gifts to assert himself on offense, become more consistent from outside. He's got super high upside, but also just, you know, the bust potential is large as well. And I think that's, you know, that's a good pick for the Knicks, though. If they're able to bring him in, he kind of just fits their scheme, fits their mold. He'll be a fan favorite just because he's, you know, so different. Knicks fans will be calling him KD from day one. So, you know, it kind of all just depends. But, you know, if they go Obi Toppin or something like that, they might be better served doing that because so many point guards are going to be available at 25. And, you know, the three guys that I mentioned, I don't know if Kyra Lewis will be there, but definitely Tyrell Terry if he declares. Definitely Grant Riller is someone that should be on Knicks fans' radars. I think that's a guy that Knicks fans would really, really like because he, again, shot creation, can get his own shot, can knock it down from outside. And that's the biggest thing is, you know, that's what a team like New York needs is a shot creator, especially at the point guard position. And Grant Riller kind of fits that mode. I think that's someone that the Knicks should definitely be looking at if they, you know, if they do not pick a point guard first and then they have that 25th pick, it makes a lot of sense. Second question here from Park City Dion. If the Knicks take Obi, which I just mentioned, do you think Isaiah Joe can play opposite RJ Barrett and Frank Ntilikina? Together, also play some backup point guard. Isaiah Joe, again, what you're getting with him is a pure shooter, can knock down the three at a super high clip, super fun to watch from Arkansas. I think anyone, you know, especially when you're talking about Frank and RJ, two guys that, you know, Frank's more of a distributor, RJ's more of a scorer, and you fit in a guy like Joe at shooting guard between those two guys, if he is to develop, I mean, it's a seamless fit. That's what New York's looking for. You know, space in the floor. Isaiah Joe, another guy that can take it off the catch and knock down the three. I don't buy the backup point guard comment for him as much, especially in the NBA. I don't know if he gives you that side, but the fit alongside Barrett and Ntilikina on paper at least is really good if he pans out. Third question here from Nakash Nath, a good friend of mine at Arizona State. What team needs James Wiseman the most? That's an interesting one. Obviously, I think I've kind of let my opinion on Wiseman reign free in episode one of the Prospect Podcast. But, you know, a team like Charlotte, who's needed a center for so long, Cody Zeller has been there for, I mean, since the early stages of life. And James Wiseman fitting in to a team like Charlotte is I think for him at least, you know, a good fit because he's able to clog up the paint in a team like, you know, on a team like Charlotte. It makes the most sense for me. I don't know if you know, the Warriors do pick Wiseman. I don't think it's a great fit on paper, but maybe they do. I mean, Warriors fans, again, had to deal with DeMarcus Cousins moving like a refrigerator in the finals after his injury. That's kind of what James Wiseman will look like to me the first few years, especially off, you know, ball screens. But I think in terms of needs Wiseman the most, the Hornets definitely fit that for me at least. Fourth here from Harrison Campbell, another good friend of mine from Arizona State, best point guard that's not LaMelo. I'll reiterate this again, Killian Hayes, and he might be better than LaMelo. We don't know. I think right now he's probably better than Ball, but in terms of upside, again, I'm still taking LaMelo. Last question, Football and Chill Pod, what's the hosting site you use? Anchor.fm. You've probably heard an ad from them already. I really like this website. It's worked well for me so far. It's how I'm producing my first one. Could be the last time because we could be on YouTube next week, but that is my show, the first episode of the Prospect Podcast. Again, at Ethan Piotta on Twitter, you can follow me. You can follow the Prospect Podcast at Prospect Pod. It's been a blast doing this episode. Hopefully you guys enjoyed it. I'm, you know, completely open to taking feedback. Hopefully you can have some guests on this show, talk some more draft, questions, help, whatever you guys want me to talk about. I'm here to talk about, here to lay out my opinion. And definitely a good time. Maybe might be on YouTube next week if that's kind of what I want to do in terms of dissecting clips and whatnot, because I have so many of them. But definitely something that, you know, I'm just going to keep testing the waters with. So if you enjoyed this, please like it, whatever you can do. Follow me and follow the Prospect Podcast on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter for more draft content. Thanks, guys. Peace.